Hello and welcome to the N17 podcast. My name's Cosmo. Tonight I'm joined by Eddie.
Good evening.
And I'm joined by stressed out looking Glenn, to be fair. You had your head in your hands just then.
Yeah, I'm just tired. I'm just tired.
It's from all that travelling.
Tell the listeners where you've been. Mr. International, man. Mr. International, bro.
I'm going away in a week and a half as well.
Used to be Mr. International. Yeah.
I'm going away in 10 days as well.
Yeah, look at him.
Yeah, no need to show off. Blimey.
Look at him. He could have gone away during the international break and he's decided to go away when the international break is over. I know where his heart lies.
But he just hates Angeball, to be fair. And we'll get into that later. To be fair, I don't know why. It just seems like these agendas always fall against Glenn somehow. It's from nowhere. Yeah,
why always me?
It's not like you do anything to like even make it a thing. It just develops.
Nah, it's easy to hate the Scotsman, I reckon.
Yeah, I reckon so. Yeah. I reckon that's the.
I reckon it is.
It's the... If it was like Spurs mentality, like Scottish and Spurs is just like everyone hates you.
Yeah, that's Alan Hutton.
Yeah,
that's all we can
I hate Alan Hutton as well. So.
Straight up, bottom three fullbacks in my lifetime. That's all I'll say about that.
Do you remember when
three Premier League players?
Do you remember when they tried to sell him to us as a wing back?
No. Hutton. Oh my god. Oh my.
Because I remember we had Chorluka and Hutton, and then like Hutton was kind of like repackaged to us as like the sexy attacking version. I don't know how that ever happened.
Let's move on to better things.
Eddie, I love that segue. That's a brilliant one. Let's start with the first half of Luton. First half, which I actually missed the majority of it when we were playing well. And I only really, I think from 30 minutes onwards, that's when I was able to tune in. But obviously, I've watched the highlights back since. We were really on top, playing free-flowing football. But it looked like it was going to be one of those days, didn't it? Because when you're spurning those kind of opportunities, it tends to only go one way for Spurs. But, you know, under Ange, it seems to be different. Eddie, what did you make of... let's go pre-Bissouma sending off.
Right, okay. Good that we have that kind of as a pre and post, because it's very different thoughts either side of that. First of all, it's nice to be back. I actually missed the post... North London Derby. It's the first pod I've missed in yonks. So.
Yeah, I feel like we actually cursed it because we were saying like, oh, this obviously I'm always here, but then we were like, oh, but Eddie never ever misses a show. But then immediately after,
yeah, I don't know, man. I got spooked. Now I'm joking. It's nice to be back, and it's nice to be back and it not have turned since I've gone, because that's usually the case with Tottenham. You miss one week and all of a sudden it's we're down in the dumps again. And that isn't the case. I know we'll briefly potentially talk about Liverpool away from the controversies at a later point. But I think that the first half, especially pre-Bissouma, was just a continuation of the things that we were seeing positive aspects of our games just throughout the early parts of the season. I thought that we really saw a lot of those things click into gear. Obviously, with all the respect Luton deserves in terms of making it to the Premier League with the type of budget that they're on, it's a type of opposition where we should be exerting our dominance over. And I thought that we did that really well early on. The aggression was high. The ball retention was good. And I think that the intelligence to pick the right passes on the ball, it was all there. And I think that the strange thing for me was Luton set up with an almost 4-4-2, which I guess is not strange if you believe in the, you know, lower teams playing that 4-4-2 pump it football. But Luton do that to a degree. But the fact that they did start with that 4-4-2 just allowed us to play through that midfield so often. Just because we had the bodies in the midfield. We had a midfield box of four with their two midfielders. It just wasn't working for them. And the quality that we had on the ball is really showing with that interlinking play with early parts, Richarlison, Son, Kulusevski, Madison. Saar was doing such a good job of mopping up the ball and doing simple things well. Udogi linking up well with Richarlison. I think Udogi, especially actually in those early parts, when you have Son out on that wing, Udogi can make both those inside and outside runs because Son is a lot better on the ball than Richarlison. But what Udogi done especially well in those early points is give Richarlison an option every time Richarlison was on the ball, because Richarlison, his abilities aren't on the ball, picking a pass, that kind of play that a winger usually does have. And Udogi really, really helps Richarlison at early doors by offering those runs down the line, getting to the byline and causing a lot of issues for Luton early on. Listen, like, the only problem with that first half is that we didn't score. And part of the reason is that Richarlison, although he was linking up well with a lot of the players, was poor in front of goal. Son had a half chance, was poor in front of goal. We should have been 3-0 up within 15, 20 minutes. And for as good as the football was, that can't happen again. We cannot do that again, just because we're not going to be playing Luton every week. And although they didn't create much in that first half, there was a chance in that first half when it was 0-0 and they nearly went 1-0 ahead. And that would have been typical Spurs, dominating the early parts, when we do dominate the early parts, giving away a chance and then the opposition scoring. And obviously, we'll talk about post-Bissouma. So, yeah, I thought early doors is a continuation of the positive aspects of Ange Ball that we've seen.
Yeah, just before we come to that, Eddie, you mentioned Richarlison. He's not really like the kind of winger who's going to like beat his man and deliver a good cross or deliver a good pass. And then obviously we saw he wasted his chances. So, Glenn, what did you make of his performance in terms of if he's spurning opportunities, he's not really playing as like a out and out winger. What's he really doing, I guess?
Do you know what? I feel like I have a really sort of biased view on Richarlison because I do really like him. Like, I have really liked him for a long time. I wanted him at Spurs. I thought it was a brilliant signing at the time. Richarlison's strengths in the first half were his 1-2s, his link-up plays with Madison and Son and Udogi in particular, who all came short for the 1-2 pass, because I think that's something that Richarlison has that's really underrated, actually. He sort of plays this 1-2 pass with a lot of different players and goes off the back of defenders, almost like they don't realise that he's making the run straight after because he's got this like weird quickness where he's like actually got quite good acceleration without moving that fast. He sort of like gets into the space without defenders realizing. And I think that's where he actually got his two chances from. In particular, ghosting off the back of a defender from a cross and then ghosting off the back of the defender for the 1-2 with Madison. And the fact that he's getting those positions says a lot to me, because we can't forget that 3 or 4 weeks ago, we were talking about how Son had been absolutely terrible from the left-hand side. Didn't look like he was getting in the positions to score. Didn't look like he was sort of like even involved in the game. And the fact that we're even talking about Richarlison getting in those positions has to say something about the build-up side of his play. Having said that, at least one of those needs to go in from the chances that he's had, and he's a massive confidence player, and I'm really fear for him, because Brennan Johnson will come back after the international break, and I just don't know if he gets that start again anytime soon, really, until we need to rest Son. And I kind of fear for him because Veliz has started playing. Obviously, he had a little cameo at the end today. Brennan Johnson, obviously, is to come back. Kulusevski was unbelievable, which I think we'll touch on later. I really kind of worry for Richarlison's hopes in the next month or two because I just don't see him getting many starts anymore.
Do you know what's mad? Like, I know this probably isn't the best thing to be saying as like a Spurs podcast that you're coming to us for insight, but I keep forgetting we've actually signed Brennan Johnson. I keep being like, oh, Perisic and Solomon are out and Richarlison isn't looking good on the left wing. Like, we're really going to struggle through to January. And I forget we actually have this new player ready to go.
And Hill as well.
I mean, does he exist? Is it just a figment of our imagination? This Bob head, like, little, yeah, figment. I just,
little beetle head.
Yeah. I just, I yeah.
Time traveler. Time traveler from a time gone by.
I just can't, to be honest, like, I love the idea of Hill, but I feel like it's just an idea. I can't really see him coming in and, like, actually getting minutes. But like you say, like, Johnson, this player who has signed for us, he would have been quality in that game, I think. So we really are, like, missing out on him a lot. Glenn, you're raising your eyebrows there a bit.
Yeah, I just want to say that he did have some good chances against Arsenal in the North London Derby, which he also spurned. So
we need to temper things here.
I'm not saying that he's going to come in and, like, bang in loads of goals and he'd take the opportunities that Richarlison had. I just feel like more in terms of just having someone that can run in behind would be really useful. Like, I really do think Richarlison did
because playing against Luton, who did sit back quite deep in that first half, the 1-2s were the way to get him behind. And I think he did it really well. But again, didn't finish his chances. He looked pretty nervous in front of goal. Didn't even look like composed at all. Never has for Spurs. So
Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned the pre and post Bissouma. I guess we better come to the red card. I feel like the consensus in the chat was, I mean, people were angry, man. People were really angry. I remember seeing that there'd been a sign-in to the Twitter as soon as it had happened. I got a little notification that someone signed into the Twitter, and then I saw someone saying he'd been really a stupid boy to get sent off. It was me. It was definitely, yeah. I knew it was Eddie just from the way it was written. But I think the sending off is really bad. Like, those two, like, basically, like, textbook yellow cards. And it is silly. But I do feel like it's kind of like one of the things. I think there is a little bit of that to his game, Bissouma. I think he is a bit naive at times. But I feel like that's something which, as he gets older, he'll learn not to do stuff like that. But it was silly. But to be honest, the dive, looking back on it, I think he was, like, expecting to get hit. And it's one of those things which, in the moment, you're bracing for contact. You've gone down. He probably, in that moment, forgot he was even on a yellow. People might be like, oh, he's a professional footballer. He should do better than that. But it can happen. It can happen.
It's just the inconsistency of that decision being made means that footballers do take that risk. There are other times where footballers dive, and it's still diving, but there's minimal contact. So, but they will get that decision, or they will dive and the referee will assume there's been contact and they get the decision. And the fact that the referees are not consistent with that, with that decision making in that position, not I'd have to smash it, but in that position, Bissouma is, like you said, expecting the contact, but he goes down, and it's the type of thing that should be clamped down on. It just happened to be us that it got clamped down on.
Do you know what the nail in the coffin for him was? The fact that he turned round and appealed for the foul. I think if he's clever there, if he in the moment switches on, like you said, Cosmo, he probably doesn't realise he's on a yellow card. But if he switches on in that moment and goes down and then just gets back up straight away, we've seen this so many times before when players have sort of gone down as a dive and then got back up straight away and been like, oh no, I didn't appeal for the foul, it wasn't a dive. If he's like cerebral enough in that moment to sort of do that, I think he gets away with it. And I think I've seen it so many times before. But the fact that he goes down and then appeals for it, it's just like, oh, for
sake. It's like...
You're killing yourself, man. Like, you know you've made a mistake. And it's just that when the head goes down, when he knows he's about to get booked as well, and he just has that stupid long walk to the corner of the ground because it's one of these old throwback, like, football league grounds. Yeah, it's just embarrassing.
Yeah,
like, I think... It's just embarrassing as a Spurs fan. You can't really argue with it. No. It's just
well, I'm
like,
glad that no one did as well.
Yeah, I agree.
I think, yeah, like you say, Glenn, even if he turned around, he's like, ref, I thought I was going to get clamped. I didn't mean to do that. That's all you need to say. But yeah, appealing for it was pretty poor and it put us in a terrible position from being really quite dominant in that game.
I think the most difficult part about that isn't that it was us going down to 10 men. Because I think we've seen this season a lot of teams going down to 10 men, and more than usual, especially this season, teams have ways of setting up with 10 men. We've seen it with Liverpool. They've gone down to 10 men 3 times this season and still managed to not lose points, which
apart
to me
against
is
us.
Really cool. They've managed to get away with a point or points this season. And apart from against us, obviously, like you said. And I think that old adage of in training, you have to be doing, 11v10, 10v11, even 11v9. It is just a case of, in the Premier League, you lose a man, that is going to automatically make your game a lot more difficult, especially when you're playing a system that is completely new to you, as it is with Tottenham. Bissouma is so integral to that setup. As well, with his press resistance, with his dynamic ball carrying, although his passing range isn't incredible, it's the combination of his passing range and his ball carrying that allows him to be so effective. And to lose that, and listen, no dig on Højbjerg because I think he was good when he came on. To replace that with Højbjerg, who is a completely different kind of profile. Having to take out Richarlison, who, whilst wasn't good, was creating danger for Luton, it really puts you in a sticky spot. And I think it's really telling that Bissouma hasn't even posted since the game. Not that I expect him to apologise, because I'm actually really over footballers like going on social media and be like, oh, really sorry about this. Like, I don't care. I just want you to learn from what you've done. And I think... although Ange has created a family kind of atmosphere at the club, I'm almost certain he's also created an atmosphere where he had to take responsibility. And I'm sure Bissouma was feeling rather sheepish as he walked off that pitch. And I'm definitely sure that he'll learn from that. Because like you said, Cosmo, there is a bit of this to his game. And I think the disciplinary issue is... if you think we've only played like 8 games, 9 games this season, and he would have picked up his 5th yellow card that game, although that the red card has been struck out now. Getting a suspension this early in the season, regardless of the changes to the carding system, is far too early to be doing that. And a lot of them were silly. Opening game of the season, he got one for dissent. I'm pretty sure he's got another one from dissent since then. And a lot of them have been tactical fouls that you know you're going to get yellow for. And it's just about taking responsibility, because if we're going to miss him for 3 or 4 games a season through suspension, not through injury or not through AFCON, not through anything else, through just suspension, then that's really poor. I think the opposite side of that is Romero's shown that you can do that. You can be aggressive on the ball. You can take responsibility. without giving away needless cards, which he hasn't done this season.
Yeah, and I think that's a point to come on to in the second half. The defence were just really imperious, didn't really put a foot wrong. Again, it's credit to Ange, because when he first came out with that lineup, when we saw Adogie and Porro both in there, we were like, that's way too attacking. But we've kept, don't have the stats to hand here, but we've kept a lot of clean sheets. I think we're definitely up there for most clean sheets in the league. Because, yeah, I'm really off FPL at the moment, but one thing about FPL is that you learn is that no one's keeping clean sheets this season, whereas I think we are actually keeping quite a lot. And it's so interesting to me because Postecoglou was sold as this basically attacking madman sort of thing because no one really knew anything about him. So it was kind of boiled down into that, into this guy's just attack, attack, attack. But we've been far better defensively this year than we were under our previous three defensive managers. Glenn, what do you make of the individuals, shall we say, at the back?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to touch on that when we were talking about the first half pre Bissouma red card, to be honest, because I thought we saw that what we saw in the first half was like the start of the team clicking into that Postecoglou like total football sort of style, and I thought it started in defence because both our defenders, Romero and Van de Ven, made, I think it was between them in the first half, six progressive carries that. And like seven take-ons, successive take-ons, and they progressed the ball so well, so quickly through the lines. I know it was quite easy with the 4-4-2 being set up in the way that it was, and our box midfield. But I thought they were great, like contributing going forward in the first half, and in the second half, I thought the partnership just like shone through. These are two players who are aggressive at the right times. As we said with Romero, he's really learning to be aggressive at the right time. I think this is his best performance in a Spurs shirt by far. I thought they were excellent in the air with one or two little errors that you're going to come into when you come up against a physical...
Morris,
a physical striker like Morris, who's going to be a handful in the air, and they're going to play lots of long balls. And I think one or two errors in that department, higher up the pitch as well, really not too bad. And I think we really limited them to very little chances apart from the Adebayo one where he really has to do
better.
You know, when footballers just go with the wrong foot, you just think that's absolute madness. Why would you do that?
I don't know what he's done there. But and I also think Vicario.
He's so good.
I was so off him. Like, I'm going to apologise massively here. I was the most off him of anyone in the chat. I was really worried. And since he's come in, he just does what he can do very well. And he knows what he can't do as well. His long kicking is suspect, but he doesn't use that. He uses his short passing. He's comfortable with the ball at his feet. He knows he's not a commanding keeper because he doesn't come out and collect the ball a lot. But what he does do is make very good saves, has his angles correct, is very athletic, is very quick off the line when they're playing through balls. And I think he's been one of the most unsung heroes in the Premier League this year so far, because I think he's really kept us in some games where we could have gone behind by two goals, or even the equaliser that Morris could have scored from the tight angle. I just think he's been really brilliant. And I think a player that hasn't had enough plaudits from Spurs fans even.
I think that's a sign of a good goalkeeper, though. I think the sign of a good goalkeeper is someone who... I mean, I did feel like this with Lloris for a long time, is someone who you don't even look for on the lineup. You're like, okay, the goalkeeper's there, whatever. And I feel like with Vicario, you don't notice him in the game at all, and then he'll make like a really, really good save. Like you say, that one against Morris, I thought that was going to be a goal. Again, you could say maybe it's a save he should make, but Morris has struck that so strong. Yeah, he struck that so hard. And like, I was shocked. Like, that's one of the things where you see it in that split second, you're like, okay, that's a goal. And then Vicario's kept out. I think, he's been a revelation, because I was the same, Glenn. Like in preseason, he was not looking too good, but he's been incredible.
Do you not think that also the sign of a good goalkeeper, or the sign of a goalkeeper that doesn't give you any stress, when you don't think about a goalkeeper, it means a defence are doing their jobs. If you don't think about a defence, and it means a midfielder are doing their jobs. Like, it's all about team cohesion. I was actually having a massive debate with my dad, because he's a City fan, as I'm sure like long-time listeners know. And I was talking to him about how City are not going to progress without Rodri, despite them having so much depth in the rest of their team, because he gives them the platform to be adventurous. He gives them the platform to be dynamic. He gives them the platform to take risks on the ball. And when you have Lloris and Dier, Longley, Sanchez, as we did last season, that does not give you the confidence to play risky football or dynamic football or attacking football, even if you want to, because you don't have any... You don't have any trust that the defensive platform is where it needs to be. Now with this core of Vicario, Romero, and Van de Ven, then you have Bissouma in front of them. You have that platform to be risky on the ball. And Ange Ball is created on risk. Risk from the centre-backs for the high line. Risks in with Bissouma being able to beat the press, risk from the goalkeeper playing short. When you have confidence in your team's ability to do that, that's where you perform best. And that's why we saw yesterday an absolutely insipid game of football between Arsenal and City, because City did not have the confidence to play risky football, because they had Bernardo Silva in a lone pivot. Next to him, they had Rico Lewis and Kovacic. I'm sorry, that does not exude confidence for me. That's the reason why they're not being dynamic. And of course they're missing De Bruyne on top of that. And of course, you know, they're coming up against an Arsenal team who, whilst they haven't been great, they're still very dangerous, even if they're missing the likes of Saka and Martinelli. So I do think that when you look at it in that aspect, Romero's partnership with Van de Ven, which we've talked about, and Vicario's inclusion in the starting lineup from the summer, I mean, that can only breed confidence in that whole team, that platform, and which obviously makes me worry about any injuries, including an injury to Vicario now, as well as Van de Ven and Romero.
Well, and you included in that spine, you included Bissouma, who we are now going to be without for a game at least, and then that the remaining yellow cards is going to be hanging over us. I actually thought Højbjerg did pretty well.
Sorry, Cosmo. Do you boys worry that now that Romero and Van de Ven have formed this unbelievable partnership, that we will struggle to attract another centre back of the ilk that we need, because they have struck this amazing partnership, and that they might see that and see that as like an unbreakable partnership, and they're only going to get a chance when they're injured. Like a young centre-back would take that chance. But
do you not think that the best teams have always had depth, though?
Yeah, I do agree with that. But they see that these two have been like literally every single game playing. Do you not think that that might be a struggle in January to attract a centre-back? Not so much in the summer, because I think we can attract depth. But in January, players kind of only want to go if they're a shoo-in to start, I think.
I think it's a good point, Glenn, because I don't agree with Eddie, what you were saying so much, that like great teams always have depth. I feel like teams like City manage to, because they just have so much wealth. But for whatever reason, my mind went back to Barcelona when they had...
as soon as I said that as well.
Yeah, Puyol and Piqué at the back. And they really struggled to bring in their centre-back. Behind them, they signed that Ukrainian guy, didn't they?
It's
called Chigrinsky, I think. And Pep was like, "Yeah, this guy's like future. He's so amazing on the ball," and like he was like one of the biggest flops in Barca's history. And I think for ages, yeah, Eddie, until, like you say, they brought in Mascherano, they had like a really aging Rafael Marquez as their backup. And then after that, they would just have some kid. So it's an interesting point, Glenn. But I think it's double-sided because I think when you have a starting pair that are that good, you don't really need someone who's going to compete with them like that strongly to actually come into the team. I think you need like a, for me, I'd hope that we'd sign like a young, hungry centre-back. But you don't want to be dropping, for me, you wouldn't want to drop like 60 million on like someone like Tapsoba because we have a lot of areas of the squad that we need to address before that.
Also, potentially bringing in like another 40, 50 million pound centre-back completely blocks off someone like Dorrington, Vaskovic, like any like of the young prospects that we might have at centre-back. Not so much Phillips, because I think he's in there. I think he's third choice. But I think it does block off like a route for a potential young centre-back to come through, because then you already have your four. And so players like Dorrington, Vaskovic, like, unless they really start to push, they're not going to get many chances to play.
I just see Dyer on the bench and I worry. Like, I see Dyer on the bench week in, week out, and I see, like, we're one injury away from having him as a starting centre-back in a line that we play inside the opposition's half. It just really worries me. And it worries me that we might not be able to attract a centre-back. So even the guy at Bournemouth, I think, will be looking at the team now and being like, I'm just going to sit on the bench.
But players are so competitive, though, I think, even...
Yeah.
I mean, prime example, Troy Deeney was saying that he thinks he's better than Harry Kane in most attributes. I mean, if we're using Troy Deeney as, like, let's use him as the average IQ of a footballer, we could bring anyone in, to be honest.
Yeah, but I do think, Troy, you're being very generous by saying he's the average IQ of a footballer. He's probably got the average IQ of a three-year-old. But
maybe a lot of footballers are like that. I don't know.
No, he's worse.
I do think you raise a fair, like both of you raise a fair point that I think that the criticism that's been levelled at Tottenham, or not so much criticism, the thing that's been hurled against our heads, over our heads, sorry, is that one injury and we're struggling. And I really, really like, it boils my blood. And then like quietly, I'm just like, well, they ain't wrong though. Like, that's what frustrates me, is that if we lose a Romero, if we lose Bissouma, if we lose Maddison, particularly like those three, then we're like, where does that defensive solidity come from? Where does that midfield anchor come from? Where does that creation come from? I do worry about it. And also, I do think that where we have to kind of temper expectations, remember, we'll talk about it later on in the season, later on in the podcast, obviously later on in the season, is how do you manage a team like this? Because we're now only in two competitions. We haven't played an FA Cup game yet. And rotation is going to be few and far between. So how do you keep this team fit? We're already kind of struggling and we've only played 8 games. We're seeing Maddison and Son like kind of crawling to the finish line in a lot of these games. And
they're going to be flogged on the international break.
Well, you know that for sure. When you send a player off to Klinsmann, never expect them to have a good time, basically. And when you think about, like, every time a player goes down, I'm like, oh no, it's over. It's Jova. Like, I'm thinking
I'm
that.
To say I'm the same, man.
I'm thinking that, bro. Even, like, let's say, like, Udogie goes down. You lose, like, 10%
There's so many like that.
And if Porro is out, you lose so much on the ball when Emerson...
Porro is one of my... Yeah, Porro, I think we could take more. I think Vicario, the centre-backs, Bissouma, Maddison,
that's home half our team.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. That is why I'm so terrified. Like, I want to dream under Ange, but I also know that, like, one injury and then it's Jova, like you say. Like,
I think we're quite lucky in the injury.
Record.
Jeez, I'm not used to not having the recording rights, but Eddie is now in control of the Zoom. We're straight back in. Glenn, I can't remember what you were saying.
I was saying that we're actually really lucky in the injuries that we have had this year, that they've actually come in positions where we have backups and where we have a bit of rotation. So, for example, Perisic, we had Solomon, and Solomon, we had Richarlison or Son and Brennan Johnson to come back. So the injuries that we have had so far, touch wood, have been in positions where we have a backup that the level doesn't drop so drastically.
The level is
almost as high. So, yeah. And that just gave me a really bad flashback. But
yeah. Same. Can you imagine if he was still in charge? He'd still be going.
Imagine what he would have said about Basuma. Imagine
he'd still be going on about Kane.
We cannot rely on these players.
This player.
I can't. I'm sorry. We cannot compete.
When you lose a player like Harry,
if Tottenham wants to carry on in this way, maybe I'm the wrong manager.
A fucking gaslighter. I hated him so much. Jesus Christ.
He actually had an aneurysm in that pre-match press conference for the first game of the season.
I'm telling you, this podcast is genuine, like it's like group therapy. And for the Conte era, that was the biggest, like, that was the biggest era for group therapy for us, for the podcast, just acting as therapy. So I think
it got to the point where it was almost like we basically had to walk away from the therapy. I think we were just so disillusioned. Like, we literally, I don't know, it was just, everything just went blank under Conte. It was the darkest of times, really, honestly. And I think those outside of Spurs don't really realise how bad it actually is. Like, when someone at work, like, asked me about it, I looked like I'm having a Vietnam flashback. Like, that was the most miserable I've ever been as a Spurs fan. As I've always said, like, I never thought that it could get worse than Sherwood. I hated Sherwood. I wasn't even that old when Sherwood came in. I was probably like, how old were we? Probably like 16, 17 when he came in.
Maybe.
Yeah, possibly. And I just remember him being like, well, you know, first things first, the job's got to be right for Tim Sherwood. I was like, who are you, bruv?
Please don't.
You're a caretaker manager and you're saying the job's got to be right for you. This is Tottenham Hotspur. It's one of the biggest jobs in the world. And you're saying the job, I don't know who you are. Oh, I'm going down so many beers. This is becoming therapy. I'm unlocking all these memories I tried to forget.
Isn't it so good, Ben, that we now have someone who's like the new partner is like, I know what you've been through. We don't have to do that again. You know, Ange looked at Tottenham and they're like, I can fix him. We were that.
It's so true.
As it with Tottenham, like, I can fix him. And
but I think I'm like the crazy person in a new relationship where I'm like going way too deep into it. I'm already thinking of getting like Ange tattoos. It crosses my mind quite a lot. I'm ashamed to admit. I do think
propose ASAP.
Yeah, like would it be weird to get Postecoglou some kind of tattoo? And I'll keep pinning it. I keep being like, oh well, if we win a trophy, then maybe I can do it, but it actually enters my head an unhealthy amount of times. It's quite weird.
Yeah, next thing you see, you're going to see on our Twitter, like, how often do you think about Ange Postecoglou, and is 7 times a day too much? Honest answers only.
It's way more than that. He's on my mind a lot.
On my mind 24/7.
He is. I don't think an hour goes by without me thinking about Ange, to be fair.
And do you think that, obviously, this is going to be me doing host. Do you think that Ange, compared to Conte, when you look at the second half and you look at the changes that he made by bringing on, by taking off Richarlison, bringing on Højbjerg, were you worried about it mirroring some of the worst parts of Conte when we took off an attacker, brought on a midfielder? Although I did say that I thought that he was going to do that. Shout out to me. and Glenn was trying to fight me through half time saying that weren't going to happen. I was really worried that it was going to be Harambol 2.0. But I think that we're seeing such a revolution at Spurs that even when we made that sub, it never felt like we were playing negative football. We were just being way more pragmatic and practical. And I think...
Go ahead. Yeah. I think that's another string to his bow, isn't it? Like, when you think this guy, he's been... Like I say, a lot of journalists didn't know a lot about him, so we just kind of got this condensed version of what he is, that he's like this ideologue that only plays attacking football. I wouldn't want to see him going pragmatic all the time, but I think it shows a lot of bravery, the fact that he will sub Son and Maddison quite early in games because he's like managing their minutes. I think that's another string to his bow in terms of like, oh, he's actually like looking after these players and we're not going to run the risk of being without them for 3 to 4 months. I think the fact that he is taking them off that early, though, does show that the medical stuff definitely in his ear. Like, these guys are on the edge of missing a lot of football, which is worrying.
But I do also think, like, at the risk of going back to the start of this second half of this podcast, it's a stark difference to when Jose Mourinho said, I look at the bench and then I look back at the pitch.
That's one of the best quotes, by the way. Like, even though it's so negative, it's good. Noted.
But however, he looks at the bench and he brings these players on, which must give them more confidence. Like, to say, look, you are good enough to come on and replace Son and Maddison with half an hour, if not more, because he knows there's going to be lots of added time in these games to go. And he said, you can change this game. You can influence this game. You can help us win this game. And he just gives these players confidence. Like, they know that they will get their chance when Son and Maddison can't play. And we need that, because these are players, like we said before, we cannot risk them getting injured. We can't. But the players that come on know that they can still influence games and still be a part of the effort towards whatever we may think that this effort is going towards. But do you know what I mean? It's like a completely different look at the bench and the way they can influence games to, for example, a Mourinho or a Conte. And we were saying in the group chat earlier about Bale, how he got, 11 goals in 20 appearances for Spurs. Honestly, I think he'd have been unbelievable under Ange, and I don't want to dream about it because it's never going to happen. But he, like, that's the sort of player that you could really see thriving under Ange, just with half an hour of football every week. And I think looking at January, maybe these are the sorts of players that could come in and influence games. But we are looking at a different profile now with younger players, and I think that we can attract some crazy talents because of the chances that the players on the bench are getting apart from the centre backs.
Can you imagine being one of those players on the bench when Mourinho said, I look at the bench and I look back at the pitch? Can you imagine that?
You know exactly who it was, man. Like, it was Harry Winks and them, man. And they're no longer at the club. So, some of them are. But we won't get into that because some of them are just on loan, which is, I don't even want to think about that. That's a next summer problem. I do think, interestingly, like you said, Glenn, with the extended time that these games are running on with, you always constantly think, or certainly I was thinking that, I think I'm almost certain you or Aaron were thinking about this, Glenn, like, why is he not bringing on Velez? Like, why? Like, he's taking so long to bring on Velez. And I don't know, maybe I'm eulogizing about or talking about Ange in such great with such great adoration because we're doing so well. But the time he took off Kulusevski and put on Veliz was the perfect time in the game to then pump it a bit longer for Veliz to win headers and cause a bit of a nuisance. He even nearly got a goal for himself. Like, I'm constantly surprised, like, again, just like the change in the club. Because, like, I'm sorry, I don't know how much Conte would, if ever, would put Kulusevski up front. He would sooner put Kulusevski at right back than up front to hold up the ball. And I think that's partly to do because Ange trusts that Kulusevski will do the hard work, will run, will hold up the ball, and he's got the intelligence to wriggle out of tight spots, which we haven't talked about it yet. Maybe his best game since two seasons ago, potentially. I think he was bloody terrific. And I'm, thank God Jed's not on the pod because he would be ready to shut me down. But I thought that, no, I miss you, Jed. Come back on the pod soon. But I think that Kulusevski is getting back to his best. And I think that is absolutely down to Ange being like, you're the player that I want in that position. Even though we talk about his limitations, potentially that he doesn't have the pace to go around defenders. But I think when you look at his stats this season, the way he's affecting games is so underrated in terms of his attacking output, his chance creation, his progressive carries. We're seeing a player get back to his best, and it is not off the back of counter-attacking football, which is what we associated with his best moments under top with Tottenham, breaking with Kane and Son. We're seeing it with much more controlled possession. And I think he's getting back to his best. And I think Tottenham are at their best when he's being creative, when he's got the license to positively affect the game and he's not playing as an auxiliary wing back.
Yeah, he was brilliant in that game. I think one of the things that impressed me so much was his ability to carry it. Actually looked quite quick, surprisingly, Kulusevski, because we do associate him with being very slow, but some of his ball carries in that game were amazing. And not just that, he had the quality at the end to punch through some really good balls to the likes of Son. Yeah, Eddie, like you said, I think he is getting back to his best. And I'm just looking forward to when we can get Johnson in that team, to be honest, on the left, because I think we are going to look a lot stronger. For sure. Yeah, Glenn, I don't know if you want to say anything on that.
Yeah, I just think that Kulusevski's kind of become a victim of like his own success in a way. Like defenders now double up on him. He comes up against left backs who are a lot quicker in general than centre backs. And I think when we saw him play up front, we did see the speed that he has and as well as the strength. Just because he's coming up against a different profile of player as a centre back, you're not as quick as a fullback, especially a modern day fullback. And I think the end product that we're seeing slowly coming back into his game and sort of, I don't want to say it's fully back because when he first came to Spurs, it was like a goal involvement every other game or every game, to be honest. It's just nice to see that he's sort of settling into his team and the stats that he has are crazy. I don't even want to know, like, well, I do want to know how the distance that he covered on the weekend, because that could be like record breaking numbers, because he's been top in the league anyway. And then we realized how much he was doing on the weekend especially with 10 men and playing up front. I think it'd be ridiculous numbers, even though he came off like 5 minutes early.
Yeah. I think what we're going to see from him this season, as long as he stays fit, because I think what he struggled with was when he came back from injury, he looked very sluggish on the ball, didn't, and like those twitch muscle fibers, whatever you want to call it, he wasn't firing the way he was. But I think that with, like you said, with potentially Luton, the type of football that we're going to see play, potentially with Brennan Johnson coming in on that left-hand side, we're going to see just how effective that left foot can be, because you know that with Johnson's pace in that back stick, he's just going to cause so many problems. And once Kulusevski gets that accuracy back, because that cut in left foot cross to the back post, it's always on for us just because of the space we create with occupying the midfield spots. And we always have a man extra on the other side because of our fullbacks. So it'll be interesting to see really just how effective he might be. So yeah, it's quite exciting. I also saw some interesting stats earlier on today that Tottenham this season, we have the third highest passes behind City. I mean, I don't think you're ever going to pass more than City in this league. And Chelsea, who this season have done amazingly well at keeping the ball without doing anything with it. But aside from that, we have the most shots attempted and the most shots on target. And you can, that is a major difference between this season and last season. And again, as Spurs supporters, I don't think people understand the difference in football and what it means to us just to see a better brand of football. And I know we're going to talk about expectations going on into the rest of the season, but the fact that people are trying to talk us into a title challenge, or people are associating Spurs fans with saying, oh, we could do it. Well, no one's really said that we could do it, but people are reluctantly tuning into Spurs every week and seeing that we are performing well and begrudgingly admitting that we've started the season well. And so now all of a sudden it's building Tottenham up to watch them fail, which is what the media have done so many seasons. And teams celebrate it. When Leicester won the league, it was at our expense. When we were challenging for that season another time and we finished third, we were never first in either of those seasons, and we were told that we bottled the title. So I think it's just another psyop by like other fans to essentially put us into a title challenge, only for us to not get there when we've said a top five finish would be a great achievement considering where we were when Ange took over.
Yeah, it's difficult to keep your feet on the ground at the moment, though. I mean, I'm not saying that I think we're gonna mount like a sustained title charge, despite how Glenn's looking at me. Mainly because, like what I said earlier in the podcast, it's just the fact that I do think we're one injury away in, like you pointed out, Eddie, six positions from potentially not getting results against quite a lot of teams in the Premier League. I think that's my worry. But my hope comes from the fact that, like, well, not even hope. Okay. One, the thing is, it's absolutely insane and beyond my wildest expectations that we would be top going into the second international break. Especially on 20 points. Like, we've mastered like a massive amount of points from our eight games so far. Did not see that come in. But then also the fact is that, like, I think because we have this one game a week at the moment, we are able to just be like, okay, can we win that next game? Can we win that next game? And at the moment, a lot of the games are looking winnable. So if we keep just putting one foot in front of the other, then who knows what can happen. But yeah, obviously, it's not going to happen, is it, boys? But who knows?
Could we?
We couldn't. It's like that meme where the woman's looking and she's like, oh, she got a disgusted face, and then she's like,
yeah. So true.
Yeah, but nah, we can't. Nah. Do you know what it is? It just comes to that run of ridiculous fixtures that we've been drawn in April or whenever it is. Well, it is April. I know it's in April because I looked at it today. And I just think at that point of the season where it just gets ridiculous and City will be on that run of like 12 games unbeaten by then with like Rodri and De Bruyne back and Stones back. I just think it's fake. Like it's just like we're never gonna keep up with City, who slyly have actually had a better start than they did last season, and the definitely. Season before.
Yeah, almost definitely. They never started well this season,
and they just go on this run after like in December where they just don't lose. And it just gets stupid, and they end up on like 99 points at the end of the season. And I worked out you have to like lose like what, 3 games or 4 games, and you're out of it. It's just that is crazy. Like you lose 4 games and you're out of the league.
I think the beautiful thing is though, like about having Ange, is that I feel like even if we were to come like 5th or 6th, I think we would still be quite pleased with the progress.
That's the thing. Yeah. You see progress. Like we were all saying this at the start of the season, and all the like rival fans were saying, yeah, you wouldn't really be happy with 6th. But we are. Like we really honestly don't care about being first going into the international break. Whereas Arsenal fans from the first game of the season last year where they played on the Friday before anyone else had played, we're singing, we are top of the league. Like, there's a difference here. We're happy with progression. They just, like, sort of expect something that's never going to happen. They're just deluded. Like, there's a difference.
I've said this before. Like, I remember I've been saying this from like, the start of the podcast. I kept being like, if we get good results against Arsenal and Liverpool, where our expectation is going to be. And to be fair, I'm quite surprised that at least Spurs fans' expectations have been... We've been very measured, to be fair.
It's just because we don't care. Like, it's because we're so happy with the progress and, like, the football and the connection to the club that we don't actually really care about the final result. It's more about, like, the journey. Oh, that's so moist. But if we were
to win the next 4, though, which I think are winnable fixtures...
Yeah, completely.
32 points after, 12 games, and we would still be top if we win our next 4. What happens then?
Top four. Like, third, I'd be happy with third. Like, fourth is great because it gets us Champions League football next year. Fifth is still great because it gets us Champions League football next year. Like, Champions League football next year is my goal. Like, I'd be well happy with Champions League football.
I also think that... The outlook of the league is so completely different to like even 2 years ago. Where like 2 years ago, you didn't have the... 2 years ago, Newcastle were fighting to stay up. So let's just put that out there. 2 years ago, Villa were nowhere near where they are. 2 years ago, Brighton were good, but not this good. And so all of a sudden, you have 8 or 9 teams that are European quality teams. Like it or not.
Yeah, and the rest are in a relegation battle. The rest are in a relegation battle, which is crazy. Yeah. There's like no mid-table anymore.
That doesn't include teams. Chelsea, which is always a tough game. That doesn't include Crystal Palace, who will always give you a game away from home. You're looking at, and this is a wider thing about the Premier League now, you're looking at a complete disillusion of mid-table teams because the quality of the Premier League is stepping up to such a degree that 40 points, forget about that. 40 points is nothing now. Like most teams are going to get close to 40 points if they're not in a relegation battle. So it is about constantly evolving with the league. And if we're able to get top 4 or even top 5 this season, when we've seen how much the league has progressed in terms of quality, you were saying, Cosmo, obviously in the chat, no easy games to the Premier League trademark. It's so true because we were saying even ahead of the Luton game, we would underestimate Luton at our peril because they have things that can hurt us, and we saw that with the chances that they would be able to create with Morris. And we've seen that even teams like Chelsea weren't able to get points there. So, they weren't able to get 3 points, sorry. So we have to take Tottenham's progress and success this season in line with how much the quality of the league has changed. And that's going to be part of how we temper our expectations, or how we fit in our like expectations come the end of the season. Because like you guys said, if we finish fifth this season, I'll be delighted.
Yeah, just, I don't know why I'm saying this, but the point on Morris you mentioned, this is so irrelevant to the conversation, but he surprised me. He was a lot better than I thought he was going to be. I thought he was like a pro clubs generated player, but he was actually quite, he was tasty.
He's a Glenn type of footballer.
He's a bit of me. I quite like an old school throwback striker, but he had a lot more to his game than I thought. Right, I think Glenn's got to go, and I think that's pretty much a good place for us to wrap it up.
What do you want to say, Glenn, if there's anything that you did want to say?
No, there's nothing I didn't want to say. I'm good. I'm good. I'm quite happy that we didn't mention that we're going to be title challengers, because we're not deluded like some other fan bases.
Although, can I just say that we didn't really talk about it, which is probably for the better. But I was going to ask, I guess we can finish on this, but I know you have to go, Glenn. After the Liverpool game, the result, did your expectations for the season change at all? Did it put a different inflection on the season?
After Liverpool?
Yeah. Because I was saying that Liverpool game is going to be the watermark. We said it on the podcast as well. Even though I wasn't on there, we were saying it on the podcast. That's going to be the benchmark, the watermark for our season, because that's going to be an even tougher game than Arsenal.
I think because of the way the debate was poisoned, this is why, well, obviously we were too busy to record last week. Sorry to the listeners that we couldn't get something out. But with the Liverpool game, I think because the extent to which the debate was poisoned by the people saying like Spurs got lucky, and all the talk was just about referees. To be honest, I was quite glad that we didn't have to pod last week, because when I was listening to the other Spurs podcasts, they didn't even get to talk about Spurs, just all about referees. I was just quite glad that we didn't have to get into that. But I do think by the nature of that game, we kind of lost the opportunity to use it as a benchmark a little bit. Not to say that we got lucky or anything, but I think because it was such a freak game, it was hard to kind of judge. But again, we've come through a tough test. And now we have, like I say, we've got four good fixtures. And if we get a decent amount of points out of that, then we're going to be in a very good position, at least for top four. I think they were saying already on Match of the Day, like, it's very rare for a team to amass this many points and not get top four in the past. But Eddie, like you say, there's bigger fish now behind in the Premier League. So got to temper expectations a little bit on that, but we just look like a really good team, and it's nice to have this after the last 4 years. But I think we'll end it there, because Glenn's got to go. Thanks for joining us today, and as always, share it on socials if you can. Give us a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. It's been a pleasure as always to be joined by you boys. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
And thank you for listening.
Peace.
Eddie, I think you're going to have to stop the recording.
Nah.